Well, I'd like to first acknowledge my co-author, Paul Funk, who works at the New Mexico Lab, who helped in setting up this project and collecting some of this data. So why are we doing this? Tommy surveys have given us some numbers for this, and that's our energy costs, electricity and gas. They're typically about a quarter of a gen's variable cost. And combined, that's the second largest cost after labor. And you see there, you know, the total cost is from 2010 was a little over $5 a pair. So what do we want to do? We want to monitor individual motor loads. That's every cleaning machine, gen stands, fans in the gen. And also the total electricity consumption throughout the ginning season. So we can see how it varies, what makes it change. We've done that for the last four seasons. We've also measured airflow and dryer temperatures to estimate fuel use over the last three. And so we've tried to identify some things that you can do to save energy and try and determine what your savings might be. So I'll just show you a little bit about how we did this. We're using split core current transducers, you know, the donuts that you clamp on a wire. That's see some pictures of them there. It's kind of, see these in a lot of gens, they'll use them, you know, in their controls or, you know, just in monitoring. We also measured power at the main disconnects there, and that's what you see there. That's how we measured that. Fuel use, I said, was calculated two gens over the last 3 years, and this is done by measuring airflow and temperature, and essentially we're looking at, you know, what sort of temperature change there is in that air, and that's how we calculate fuel use. And this is, there's a procedure in the Jenner's handbook that this is a little more complex than that, but it's the same basic idea. So we put in pitot tubes in for our first and second stage pull fans, also on your humid air and moisture restoration systems, which both these gens had, and then there's a burner adding dry air at the lint slide. And so we put thermocouples in, also measured the ambient temperature and humidity. These are just some more pictures of that. There's a moist air restoration unit. And there's a lot of wires from all this, so it's kind of a snake's nest there, but I had fun hooking all that up. So we just divide all this data into individual bales, and we can just tell this from your press pump data, you know, when an actual bale is made, figure out ginning rate, power demand, electricity use, and fuel use for each bale. And so, kind of a summary of the data. We really haven't gotten to this year's data yet. The ginning season was a little later, and of course, being off work for a few weeks kind of put everything a little behind, but we've got complete data for the previous 3 years. You can see both the gin in the Mid-South and the Southeast, you know, the energy use didn't vary a lot. It's 31.4 to 32 kilowatt hours per bale at the Mid-South gin. Now, the Southeast gin, you will see from 2010 to 2011, it was a 2 kilowatt hour per bale improvement, and they had made some improvements in their gin with their press to speed up the gin, basically, and they were about 5 bales an hour faster, and that's how they saved an average of 2 kilowatt hours a bale. There was a slight increase in the Mid-South gin. They put in some extra feeders, and so obviously that's a little extra energy they're using to do some more cleaning. We found that, you know, electricity use is really inversely related to processing rate. If you're ginning faster, you're using less electricity. So some of the summary numbers on the fuel use. We see the Mid-South gin used about, you know, just under a gallon a bale. That's 3 liters in metric. But the Southeast gin, that was using just over a gallon per bale. And we see at both gins a significant amount of the fuel is actually used for the moisture restoration and then adding that heated air at the lint slide. It's about a third of the total at the Mid-South gin, and then at the Southeast gin, it's really about half, or a little more than half, is used add that moisture back in. While that's an important thing for maximizing the producer's value and, you know, saving wear on the bale press, there has been some work done in the past. Rick Byler's looked at, you know, actually adding moisture above the feeder. And this way you get the higher moisture content, the gin stand to preserve the fiber length. And it was just using water spray, so you'd be saving energy there. So that's probably something to consider and to revisit in terms of trying to save some energy. It's expensive to heat water. So that's kind of some of the things I was explaining there. 2002, if I can back a slide here. 2012, we can see we used a little more fuel for the seed cotton drying at both gins. You know, we go from about, you know, a third of a gallon per bale to about a half at the Mid-South gin, and then a slight increase at the Southeast gin. And both in 2012, the ginning season started later, so it was a little cooler and likely a little wetter. You know, most of the gins in this area, when it's later in the season, you tend to get some wet weather. So they probably had some higher moisture seed cotton. Now, this is just kind of a plot of what, you know, the fuel use versus the processing rate is for each of these four, you know, burners here. And there's a lot of spread there, a lot of variation. You know, this is the first stage dryer. But we still do see a relationship between the processing rate and the fuel use. You know, as your processing rate goes up, you use less fuel. And this is kind of shown here. These are some statistical correlations. And we see that, you know, there's a negative correlation between processing rate and fuel use for every system. And with temperature in the seed cotton dryers, there's also that negative correlation. With the moisture restoration, that's not always the case, because the cooler ambient temperatures, while it takes more energy to heat that air up, you're also more likely to have wetter seed cotton, just with that late season cotton. Something interesting we've seen, and this is kind of going to be something we look at in the coming years, I guess, is looking at the energy required to gin different cultivars. And there's been some work done in the lab. Cliff Boykin at our lab's looked at some of that. We see that here, this is data from the Southeast gin. They collected a lot of data on, you know, what cultivars were brought in, and they have good records on that. So we can see that there's some significant differences in both the ginning rate and then the energy use per bale. In 2010, the data we had, this FiberMax variety required the least energy and gin the fastest. And this Stoneville variety, it was opposite. It was the slowest ginning variety that we had data for, and also took the most energy. So we got data from 2011, and I'll point out, you see the FiberMax variety is not the lowest, but it's not significantly different than these two. We don't have many bales of data for this Americot 1550, so, you know, I wouldn't regard that one so heavily, but so it's still one of the varieties that requires less energy. And the Stoneville 4498 is, once again, the slowest gin, or one of the slower, it is the slowest this year, and the uses the most energy. 2012, again, both those varieties appear again, and we see the FiberMax 1740 being a low energy, fast ginning variety, and the Stoneville 4498 being further down the list there. There were two other varieties that appeared all 3 years. It's that Dynagrow 2570 and Phytogen 375. And they had pretty similar rates and similar energy use in 2010. In 2011, the Phytogen variety was slightly faster in 2012. Obviously, we see some differences in a commercial gin, you know, moisture content, you know, probably some growing conditions. There's a, you know, the whole environmental effect that's, you know, it's not a a replicated experiment in the lab, that it's hard to control that, and will affect it some. But I think it's pretty clear that we see some trends that some varieties, and I know y'all as Jenners recognize this, but it's nice to actually be able to have some numbers to quantify it. And this is just kind of combining 2011, 2012, where we had quite a few varieties and kind of ranking them from the least energy to the most energy per bale. And again, you see the Fibermax 1740 and then the Stoneville 4498. And we do see some, it's pretty consistent from year to year. Usually the ones that were the, you know, the lower energy stayed the lower energy and the higher energy ones were, and it was fairly consistent, although the actual ranking changed somewhat. Something else I looked at was the actual gin stand motor current and the agitator tube motor current. Both these gins had gin stands with agitator tubes. And the control set up in both gins based on the gin stand motor current. So basically when it reaches a certain limit, it's going to decrease the feed to that. Excuse me. And so we see some differences in the gin stand motor current, and it probably has something to do with how the control system responds to different varieties. It's, you know, I haven't really dug into the data enough to tease out why we see some variation when you'd expect it to be pretty constant. Because I've, for this, basically only looking at data when the gin's running full speed, and you know, not when they have some problem and, you know, they're ginning at half speed. So, and we see over here, the point I wanted to make is that we would think if that gin stand motor current is pretty constant, the agitator tube motor current should be as well, but it's not. And it varies with cultivar there. And you look at the correlation, it's about 0.5. So it's not a great relationship. There is some relationship, but we see some like this Phytogen 367 variety that, and these varieties were listed in the order of energy use from least to most at the bottom. And we see like this Phytogen 367 variety, it has a higher agitator tube current, even though it was a faster ginning variety, used less energy. And the Delta Pine 1028, which had a lower one, even though it was a slower ginning variety, used more energy. And this is the 2012 data, and we see some of the same things. And you see a pretty sizable range in the agitator tube motor current, considering you're only looking at about 7 amps, but you know, that's kind of, you know, from the maximum to the minimum, it's a range of about 1 amp, so you know, that's over 10%. And this is kind of some of what we'll probably be looking at is gin stand controls. Like I said, they're typically maintaining a constant gin stand motor current. In some cases, it does use the agitator tube motor current. But and kind of past research has shown that you increase feed rate, you increase seed roll density. If it's too high, you damage the fiber. And that's kind of what they're doing, is they're estimating that density by measuring the current. And so you set it at a limit where you don't do excessive fiber damage. The thing is, I don't think we understand what's happening very well, and we just need to do some more research, do some experiments in the lab to gain a better understanding. Basically, the idea is, you know, there may be certain varieties where you can speed up the gin stand and other ones where you need to slow it down. So, you know, we don't know, and it's something I want to look into. So kind of just some general recommendations, you know, regarding energy use. Again, we want to operate at full capacity as much as possible and minimize downtime. And your capacity gains and energy savings can be made by making sure that all gin stands remain fully loaded. You know, there's a lot of technology, and some different manufacturers have talked about it today. Some things that you can do to make sure that last gin stand, you know, stays loaded. Minimize use of air in your pneumatic conveying systems. If your material can be handled with a conveyor, it will save energy. And obviously, there's, you know, benefits to using pneumatic conveying. It's, you know, simple to run pipe from point A to point B, but it's it uses a lot of energy. We want to make sure that cotton enters the gin at a suitable moisture content. So you keep that processing rate high and you minimize your fuel use for seed cotton drying. So we want to use only module covers that are in good condition. Of course, now we have a lot of round modules, but make sure that, you know, the producers, you know, they're trying to avoid damaging that wrap, and if they do, they, you know, there's steps that can be done to, you know, repair it. And educate them on proper harvesting. You know, we don't want modules picked too wet, and we think that that may be contributing to some of the problems we've seen with bark and leaf. And also, you know, proper location of those modules in the field, and you know, don't put them in a ditch. So we want to thank the cooperating gens that have put up with us coming in and, you know, playing in their electrical boxes and putting holes in their ductwork for a few years. And also Tommy Valco and the Jenners Associations for collecting all that survey data, and Cotton Incorporated for funding this. With that, I'll take some questions.
Did you look at seed size and the leaf and the, given the varieties, did you take that into consideration?
Yeah, I have the, I don't have seed size. I mean, I'm sure I could get some measures of it from the seed companies, and I do have the leaf grades, but I'm, like I said, I'm still kind of sorting through all that data to try and make sense of that and see what might be.
I could see where leafier varieties overall energy cost could it possibly increase.
Well, in terms of overall energy cost, you know, there was been some other work done too, and you really don't see a lot of correlation between your leaf grade and your energy use. Now, with the exception that, you know, if you turn a second lint cleaner on, you know, obviously that uses, you know,
or just drying fuel, drying it down or more, whatever.
Yeah.
Paul, Harrison, one of the things we saw when we looked at the last 50 years is that as the seed size changed, energy use changed, your turnout changed, you're handling different amounts of material for that amount of lint that you get out. So
in a long-term perspective, as opposed to just comparing different varieties.
Chris?
Yes, you're absolutely right, Paul. In the back.
Oh. Mark Corey's got a question.
Oh, okay. Mark?
Mark.
First of all, I want to applaud your efforts and others at the USDA for digging more into what happens when you vary the cultivars.
Yeah, we know it's out there, but
one of the things I would love to see, in addition to the columns where you're showing the amount of energy as you carry the varieties, one thing that piqued my interest was while you've got the ones that are easy to gen, say at the top of your scale, and the ones that are maybe more difficult or more energy
right.
expensive to gen for the bottom. I would also be curious to see how those numbers correlate to the bales per hour as well, because just because it's easy to gen and maybe
well,
difficult to gen, that might aggravate.
I'll bring it back up.
Okay.
I didn't spend a long time on it, but the bales per and generally the, you know, energy and the bales per hour are inversely related. So your ones that use less energy,
yeah.
In most cases, gen faster, and that's why they use less energy.
Okay.
I mean, there are some exceptions, but generally that's the trend.
Okay.
So
I missed that one.
I was kind of rushed through that. So.
But that even skews the numbers even worse.
Right. Because when it gens slower, you've got higher labor costs per bale and everything else. So, exactly.
Kelly Green had a question back in the back mid to Will.
Yeah, Bobby, looking at your data versus our cost survey data, I think there's pretty significant differences. And we're pulling our numbers off power bills.
Right.
So, I think it'd be interesting if you went back on some or all of the gens you went to, take your data, compare it to the power bill data, and take a look at the difference in those and try to figure out, you know, is there a real significant amount of energy going to places other than the main motors that you've got, and maybe take a look at that. It looks to me like some of these numbers are pretty
to answer your question, Kelly, I didn't present anything here, but I have looked at the power bill data for these gens, And it just happens that these are really more efficient gens than kind of our average for a variety of reasons. And so, and the way I'm measuring it, I am getting the total power. I'm measuring all these motors to learn some things about the gen, but I am really getting the total power from their main disconnects. So, these numbers probably will vary a lot from your survey just because these are...
Really? It's interesting if there's some, you know, kind of large or relatively large number in there that we need to be looking at that's not directly related to the motors. I mean, it'd be easy to find out. That'd be something
like... No, this is, nearly all the power the gen uses, so yep. To answer your question.
DeWitt, then David, and then Ron had a question. DeWitt?
I think I might
be next.
A little bit here. Let's understand everything, but there's a hell of a difference between amperage on the motor and power that the motor's drawing, as much as 10, 20, 30%, because if you're not taking into account the power factor,
yeah,
you can't use the average power factor either for the plant.
You're right, and I apologize that I kind of rushed through some things and didn't really go into detail on all the methods we used. But the total power numbers you see, like this kilowatt hours per bale, that is an actual power measurement. It's measuring, we're measuring voltage and current, and basically have our data logger will process that and calculate power factor and power. So that is a power measurement.
Yeah, that's for the overall, but when you get down to the gen stand,
true. You are correct. The gen stand motor current, these are just current.
That means you could be
30% off. It probably isn't, just because this is all done when it's pretty much under full load. I mean, these numbers are all, it's 200 amps on that motor, so it's probably not a lot of variation in power factor at that point.
David Blakemore?
Did you check your turnout?
Yeah, and then Ron Kraft.
What's your thoughts on using BFDs on your motor for energy saving?
Well, obviously the one thing that where that might have a role is on a fan for pneumatic conveying. And we're looking into that. We've done some experiments in the lab, and not presented here, it's kind of technical stuff, but we're looking at developing some control systems and looking towards that to save energy.
You'll have more of a report to give on this next year then.
I suppose so.
Yeah.